And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Big shout out to Chuck in Ojai, who is the winner of the two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe. Two locations to serve you, one here in Ventura, 4950 Telephone Road in the Barnes & Noble Plaza, the other in Oxnard, 1730 East Gonzales Road, the intersection of Gonzales and Rose. Chuck, thank you so much for being a loyal listener. Now, every show has a theme, and today's theme is what the future might look like. Each of my guests is presenting his perspective on how the future can be shaped for the better. My next guest is a veteran union organizer and labor attorney. He'll explain how working people can regain power and transform America from his book, Reviving the Strike. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. Joe Burns, as I said, is a veteran union negotiator and labor lawyer. He's also a former local union president. For the past decade, he has negotiated labor contracts in the airline and the healthcare industries. As a former union president involved in strike solidarity, Joe supported many of the key strikes over the last few decades. He has a law degree from New York University School of Law. Joining us from Minneapolis, how are you today, Joe?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being our guest. And let's dive right into it, shall we? Because unions like the UAW, the AFL-CIO, the Teamsters, and others gained unprecedented power over corporate America in the second half of the 20th century. The decline of the unions, however, began in the late 1970s and continues today as union membership dwindles around the United States. And my first question to you is this: are unions even necessary anymore? I mean, give me some examples where oppressed workers are being paid pennies, they're working long hours in cruel conditions, being forced to live in company towns. We just don't see that anymore, Joe.
Well, I mean, if you take an industry like meatpacking, for example, and at the turn of the last century, meatpacking was, you know, famously described in the book The Jungle as a low-wage hellhole with really bad working conditions and so forth. But in the period from the 1930s well into the 1970s, trade unions, backed by a powerful strike, were able to transform the working conditions in that industry. They made it comparable to manufacturing jobs in terms of pay. Working conditions became better, and it became a type of job where you could own a house and maybe even send your kids to college. Since the 1980s, with the decline of the strike, what we've seen again is a return to conditions from a century ago. There was just an article in Mother Jones detailing the safety conditions and deterioration in that industry and the fall in wages. So now it's really a minimum wage job where people are struggling to get by. And you can take industry after industry and see what's going on. You take auto, for example, with the weakness of unions nowadays. You know, the job is really hard, and you got new hires starting out, you know, doing this mind-numbing work for $14 an hour. So, you know, I think unions are very relevant today, and, you know, as relevant as ever.
Well, I want to talk about two things. I want to come back to your premise about the decline of the strike. But before we do that, I want to talk about the decline in the power of unions. And I want to ask you the question, how much of that decline is a result of us being entered into a more global economy versus us just seeing the unions decline? And my best example, you said it already, is the auto industry. The United States is no longer the largest consumer of automobiles. That's in China. And General Motors makes more money in China than it does in the rest of the United States. In fact, global car consumption in India, China, places like that is way, way higher than it is here in the United States. So as we see the economy becoming more and more global, is that having more of an impact on the unions than, say, deteriorating wages and working conditions?
No, I mean, clearly the effect of the global economy has pressures upon working people in this country. So part of the downward pressure on wages is due to that. And if you look at particular industries where management's able to shift jobs abroad, that presents great challenges for us. That being said, it really can't completely explain the decline of unionism in this country, because if you take industries such as trucking and meatpacking and to a certain degree even telecommunications, what you see is a comparable decline in rates of unionization. So that leads you to believe that you really have to look at something intrinsic to unionism here in the United States, and in particular, what I focus on is the differences between the strike employed traditionally by the trade union movement and the strike today, and also changes in labor law.
All right. Well, my guest is Joe Burns. His book is Reviving the Strike. And Joe, as you look around the rest of the world and you look at strikes, where are strikes being used effectively to gain benefits for union members? Can you give us some examples?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of countries where workers are able to join together across entire industries and engage in, you know, political strikes against tax on benefits. So you saw that in Greece and so forth. And you see strikes being used in a lot of third world countries. In a lot of the advanced countries, you know, such as Britain, Australia, Canada, and so forth, I think what you really see is the same process that happened here in the United States. You see this imposition of a set of labor laws that really ties trade union hands, and you see a decline in unionization and effectiveness in all of these countries.
Right.
So I think it really is a global problem for the trade union movement.
All right. Well, let's go back to the you mentioned Greece in particular and other third world countries, but let's take a look at Greece particularly. They're a member of the EU, the European Union, so therefore they are considered part of the advanced modern world, and yet the strikes in Greece, the problems that they're having in Greece, that economy is in a shambles. I mean, it is on its last heels. It is being propped up by Germany and France and the banks in those countries and could very well default and drop out of the EU, partly because of the strong unions. What do you say to that in terms of the overall global picture?
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly there's pressures on any of these national economies. And what you have is you have a situation where capital is extremely mobile and able to move around the world, and there's a series of demands upon particular nation states to cut benefits and so forth. So you see that happening all over the world, including the United States. You have to ask yourself, well, what is able to reverse this trend? And what traditionally has been able to do that, you know, the key force has been a powerful labor movement, a labor movement committed to advancing the interest of all the workers in a given country. And in this day and age, we really have to, and a lot of unions are starting to look at, how do we expand international ties so we have meaningful international solidarity so we can act on a global level against what are really global corporations.
Oh, now that would be an interesting move, really bringing us into a global community. My guest is Joe Burns. His book, Reviving the Strike, How Working People Can Regain Power and Transform America. Let's talk about your main thesis, which is the decline of the strike. Define for us what you mean by that and why that is being used less effectively as a tool in management negotiations.
If you look at the numbers, during the 1950s, there was on average over 350 major strikes per year. That's a major strike is over 1,000 workers. Over the last decade, it's plummeted to only 20 strikes per year, 20 major strikes. And when you really start looking at it, what I discovered in writing the book is that the reason for the decline of the strike, you really have to start looking at the changes in labor law that have been instituted over the years. And what happened is, in the 1930s, in the height of the Great Depression, the National Labor Relations Act was passed, and that provides for the right to strike being protected and so forth. But employers never really respected the right to strike, and they've constantly worked to undermine the right to strike. So what you get is a series of legislation, such as the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947, and also, you know, using their influence in the court system to basically undermine the original premise of the National Labor Relations Act. So what we have left today is a situation where if workers go out on strike, even though the law says that they shouldn't be retaliated against, the employer can give away their job to permanent replacement workers. Effective union tactics, which used to be solidarity, meaning workers were able to join together not just at their individual employer but across entire industries, that's been outlawed as well. So what you have today is you really have trade unions fighting with their hands behind their back. And because of that, they're really unable to shift the wage structures of industries. And what I argue in my book is that weakness, that our inability to improve workers' lives accounts for the main reason why workers are not joining unions.
All right. That's a very interesting premise. My guest is Joe Burns. We're talking about unionism. And let's bring it back home, Joe, as you were saying before, and talk about some recent events in the news here in the United States that really show a schizophrenic outlook on unionism. And let's just start with President Barack Obama's bailout of the auto industry. That bailout cost taxpayers billions of dollars. It saved union jobs in an industry that really has been non-competitive against the Japanese since the 1970s. It's starting to turn around, but it still has been a non-player there. It's the second time, too, that taxpayers have had to save jobs at Chrysler. Now, admittedly, Chrysler paid back the loans or the debt the first time. There's no guarantee that they will this time. But even if they do, there's a strong case that since Chrysler's come knocking on the door twice, that they may come back again. U.S. car sales, while they're up in the United States, certainly don't compare to car sales in China and around the world. And then you've got, in Wisconsin and Ohio, you've got union members there in the government unions. They want more benefits. The governors of those states were saying those benefits were going to really paralyze or cripple the states. And the unions were portrayed as paying a disproportionately small share of their benefits for a proportionately small share of their benefits. And so public sentiment ran against the unions in Wisconsin and Ohio. And then more recently than that, the National Labor Relations Board blocked Boeing, the United States' largest exporter and one of the country's largest manufacturers, from opening up a $750 non-union airline assembly plant in South Carolina. Now, in an economy where we need to create jobs, this might be perceived as retarding job growth, and Boeing is doing nothing outside of the rules by trying to open up in South Carolina. They're just looking for a plant where they can make planes and we can compete on a global basis. So my question to you is, are American unions dead? What does this picture paint for us? Is it schizophrenic at best?
Well, I mean, you know, just to start off with the points in your question, you know, what happened at Boeing is it wasn't a question of whether or not Boeing was able to build a plant down in South Carolina. What the charge was that Boeing explicitly retaliated against the union for strike activity and used that as a basis for moving the plant. They did it repeatedly in the press and in videotaped meetings and so forth. So that's really the basis of those charges. It's been a bit mischaracterized in some of the media. You know, beyond that, yeah, I mean, unions have gotten there's just a Gallup poll that came out that said 52% of Americans approve of unions. So it's still a majority, but it's at low levels compared to historically. In the 1950s, 75% of Americans approved of trade unions. And what I argue is part of the reason is that, you know, we're representing a smaller and smaller group of workers, and we're less able to offer anything to benefit the vast majority of working people. So if you look at the examples that you've given, unions, you know, did fight to save auto jobs. And, you know, and in general, it's a good thing to try and keep an industry here in the United States. Certainly when you compare it to the bailouts that have happened that really didn't benefit anyone, such as the massive transfer of billions and billions of dollars to the banks, you know, who were responsible to the financial crisis or to the savings and loans crisis in the 1980s, you know, the money here, it pales in comparison, and then actually at least it produced some jobs. But nonetheless, I mean, I think it's a problem for trade unionism if we're not able to advance the interests of all working people in this country. When we're able to represent the majority, that's when we thrive and that's when we prosper. So, you know, we need to turn around the issue. The issue shouldn't be that public sector employees have pensions and health care and so forth. The issue really is, how do we get that for everybody and how do we offer everybody the hope of a better life? You know, we're in a stage here in the United States where the concentration of wealth is approaching what it was in 1929. And, you know, according to the CIA, it's more the distribution of wealth in the United States is more equal in a country like Uganda than it is the United States. That's not a situation that's going to provide for a stable economy in the long run. And traditionally, what the vehicle in society to level out wages to make sure people could buy the goods that we produce was the trade union movement.
All right. My guest is Joe Burns. His book, Reviving the Strike, How Working People Can Regain Power and Transform America. Joe, what do you want people to take away from reading your book?
Well, what I want in general is for folks who maybe are in unions and looking at forming unions to really start focusing in on what it is that we need and what types of organizations do we need to be able to improve workers' lives. And in particular, I want to start a debate within the labor movement and the broader community about the need for labor law reform and to focus on reviving a meaningful right to strike in this country.
All right, and that's very worthwhile. My guest has been Joe Burns, author of the book, Reviving the Strike, How Working People Can Regain Power and Transform America. Joe, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
They can go to www.revivingthestrike.org.
Reviving the Strike, and it's not a .com, it's a .org. It's revivingthestrike.org. Joe, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road. Happy Labor Day to you, by the way.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Take care.